So as you'll know by now, something that I'm really keen to do is to speak to the people in the city who have made an impact, who've been influential. And I'm really pleased that we've got Laura McMillan, MBE, with us today to talk about her role in Coventry becoming City of Culture. But taking a step back and actually looking at the journey that led to that, and maybe have a look at some of Laura's career going forward, maybe, because I know there's been big changes and there will be big changes in the horizon. Laura, thank you for joining me.
Hi, good to see you, Aaron. Thank you for having me.
So let's have a chat about kind of how you came to be in the city. As I understand, you weren't born in the city, but you're obviously here now. Give me an overview of kind of your younger part of your life, kind of where you started and kind of what led to you being in Coventry.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born in Glasgow, as you can tell by my very strong Scottish accent that I still have. And I moved to the UK when I was about four. So I've lived in England for most of my life. And I've been in the Midlands since I was eight. So Midlands girl, that's really where I grew up. And I've been in Coventry for about 14, 15 years. So I think an adopted Cov kid by now, I'd hope. And I came to Coventry when my now husband, then boyfriend, wanted to do a master's at Coventry University. So he just completed his degree and I went to UWE down in Bristol. And we agreed that this was part of our judges presentation, actually. We agreed we'd live here for a year because I hated Coventry. So I came up every second weekend for 3 years while we were both at university, we did long distance. And I really didn't like Coventry. And I said, like, okay, we'll live here for 1 year. And I got about 6 months in and we went to Godiva Festival. And I sat there on the grass and I looked around at all the people and families and this incredible festival that the council had put on. I thought, oh, actually, you know what, this maybe I should give the city a chance. And then about 2 months later, we agreed that we were just going to move here kind of permanently. And I absolutely loved it. And he still thinks it's hilarious that my job for the last 7 years has been publicising Coventry when initially it wasn't my favourite place. And now I think it probably is.
So tell me about what didn't attract you to the city at that point. What was it that actually you weren't kind of fond on?
To be honest, I think it was just not spending enough time here. I think because people talk a lot about Coventry being a city of welcome and adopting them and having it as your home. And I think that's actually what the city's really good at. I think if you're popping in and out for 2 days and you're a student for kind of a couple of years, 3 years in the end, I don't think I gave it enough time. And I went to uni in Bristol, so Bristol's got quite a different vibe to Coventry. But actually, I now think Coventry's better because it's got so much more to offer than necessarily Bristol has. You've got to dig a bit deeper. And I love that about Coventry. I love that around each corner, you don't necessarily know whether you're going to run into a medieval building or a kind of piece of brutalist architecture or someone amazing busking. I think maybe just I hadn't understood what Coventry had to offer back then. So to be honest, I think it was probably on me rather than on Cov.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. So I went to university in Nottingham, and when I think around cities that are similar to Coventry, I always say Bristol and Nottingham are cities that I felt at the time Coventry could aspire to be. Obviously student-heavy population, and obviously that Coventry continues to become a city like that. And I think that is really interesting. I think someone like myself that was born in Coventry, I always feel that my fondness of the city came through civic pride of being the underdog. And I wonder if you haven't been born in the city, it takes a while to get that civic pride up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think it's because I was here with my student boyfriend. We kind of went to what was Varsity and Subway more often than not. And there's such a vibrant independent scene in Coventry that back then we just didn't appreciate. So I think absolutely that's right.
Yeah, our nights out in the city are completely different to what they were before. And we used to go to the same places all of the time because it was what we knew, and there particularly wasn't many places now. Whereas when we go out now, we tend to go to different places. And I think that is a strength that we've seen. So tell me then, when you finished university, what did your kind of career or what direction did you go after you first finished university?
Yeah, so I'm a failed actor. So I did a drama degree and I went to a university where you didn't have to audition. And I still feel that somebody at that point should have told me, if you don't want to audition for university, maybe don't go into acting. So after that, I went to work at Warwick Castle. So I wanted to work in the arts, but it was quite hard to get into the arts at that stage, particularly when I had no experience. So I worked for Warwick Castle in their sales and marketing department, which I loved. I absolutely loved it. I sold weddings, I sold banquets and lots of mead, and kind of wandered around for one day dressed as a princess for a photo shoot, which actually was really fun. And then after that, I left to work for the Royal Shakespeare Company. So I was a marketing assistant and then a marketing officer there. So I was there for about 4 years, 4.5 years. And my job was marketing the shows. So I had just the most incredible experience. I've been really lucky. I've been really privileged in the roles that I've had, that I've been able to meet amazing people and to be able to sell and market something that I'm really passionate about, which I think is really important when you work in a role like I do. Mm.
I think it resonates with me. So my background's marketing as well. And when I finished university, I didn't know how to fill in an application form. I was just waving my CV in the air, thinking people would come flocking. And I ended up working in a sandwich place, and I delivered sandwiches and to the council house or to the NHS. And actually, it was a role that kind of, I think, brought in some of that marketing experience that actually was really valuable for me as time went on. Customer service skills, being empathetic, mixing with different people, and understanding that what people want one day might not be the same the next day. So yeah, it's all experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those skills that can be moved across to different roles are massively important. And I remember thinking actually relatively recently that it's so frustrating that you don't get taught how to write a CV and a cover letter. I'm going to run one day a workshop of how to write cover letters, because I've read hundreds of them. Yeah. And there's ways to do it. But I think the other thing I did at university was I was a mad science presenter. Mm-hmm. So I drove around schools and I presented to classrooms of children basically I rolled around with a candy floss machine. And it's really hard to keep the attention of kids when you at the end of the class you're going to make candy floss. So again, I think really similar to you, it was absolutely skills about public speaking and about holding attention and being able to kind of educate and teach kind of young people was really important for me at that point. So yeah, loads of skills I think that you can move across to different roles.
Yeah, I think it's really important, and I'll join you on that course, because it was something that there was the chief exec of the council, so it's Stella Manzi at the time. Basically, I just said, I don't know how to do this. Someone needs to show me. And she sat with me and said, right, this is the job spec. This is the job description. You need to match your cover letter with. And I didn't know this. And I embarrassed myself now thinking about it, that all I was doing was printing off my CV that was half a page long with a copy of my degree at the end of it and saying, there you go. And I was never going to. I ended up doing some voluntary work. So I used to finish at 3 o'clock and I'd go to the council house and for 3 hours a day for free to get that office experience. I think it is something that the city, I think, continues to need to support our younger people around that stuff. So yeah, if you ever decide to do a course on CV writing, we'll do it together. So then we kind of move on then to your time in the city. How did you move away from what you were doing then to what then became to your role with the bid?
So to be honest, I just applied. I saw it, I think, in The Guardian online, this kind of bid coordinator job for Coventry City of Culture Trust, which I then Googled, and there was next to nothing about what Coventry City of Culture Trust was. It was in the early days of Hull. So this would have been 2015 and Hull was City of Culture 2017. So when I was trying to research what on earth this thing was, it was quite a lot about Hull's build up and a little bit about Derry, Londonderry. And I am an only child and I'm quite competitive. So I kind of threw it around with my husband, now husband, and then thought, actually, I think this could be something really interesting, but it's risky. And I had quite a set career path at that point that I wanted to go on and to become my kind of marketing office, marketing manager. And this was a 2-year fixed term contract to deliver against the competition, leaving a really lovely, secure job with a team that I loved and a manager that I got on really well with at the RSC. And I basically threw every kind of brain cell aside and went with my gut instinct and applied, and obviously was successful, which is great. But back then it was a huge risk, because I thought Coventry could win, but I didn't know anything about what you had to do to win. I had no idea what the criteria was. I didn't even really know who the DCMS was back then, to be quite honest, because I was kind of a relatively junior position in an arts organisation, and I certainly would never have spoken to the Arts Council, who I now talk to almost daily. So yeah, it was quite a big decision, a big jump to make, but one I can certainly say I've never regretted.
And what stage of the process was Coventry's bid at that point?
Yeah, super early. So the council had decided to bid in June 2015. So obviously pre that, there'd been quite a lot of work done by the officers to put it to the kind of the members in June. So they decided they were going to bid in June 2015. And then they recruited our chair, David Burbage, who's just an extraordinary man, amazing man, and a bid advisor, Andrew. And then they, as part of their first kind of thing they did, was they wanted to recruit somebody to coordinate. Because there was nobody fully employed by the trust at that point, it was relying a lot on volunteers. And they realised quite quickly that you need a paid member of staff whose job it is to basically, I talk quite a lot about herding cats. So at that point, it was everybody everywhere with amazing ideas and so much enthusiasm that just needed somebody full time to try and point everybody in the right direction. Mm.
So then I think you said that you weren't necessarily certain that Coventry would win. I don't think anybody in the city was certain that Coventry would win. Give me a bit of an idea of the process that from that point to submitting the bid.
So we had a kind of timeline from the DCMS, but we had an executive group and a steering group made up of probably about 30 people who were working on marketing, development, community engagement, finance and HR. So we had these kind of concurrent streams, if you like, all working towards an initial bid. So you put forward an initial bid to the DCMS, and it's actually the judging panel that you put the bid to, and then it's reviewed by the DCMS. So for those that don't know, that's the Department of Digital, Culture, Media and Sport, which is a kind of government body. So we submitted our initial bid, and just before that we were running kind of quite big like business events. So we had a business event at Warwick Business School. We had another one at Birmingham Hippodrome, which was super fun because obviously I've had lived in Coventry for quite a while now, so I understand the relationship between Coventry and Birmingham. So it was really cool presenting to a room of basically Birmingham business people and telling them how great Coventry was, and they all held up these backing the bid for Coventry signs. Yeah. And we loved that. We were like, actually, Birmingham for a change have got behind something that Coventry's doing, where we are often kind of supporting Birmingham, and they were great. The council were fantastic, so that was really fun to do. And then you submit an initial bid, and then you get shortlisted, which we were. And we found out that we were shortlisted about 6 hours before the rest of the world, and we had a big event at the Transport Museum, and I will never forget, there was about four of us that knew, and it was all of our partners, the steering group, the council, the arts sector, and everybody was like, do you know though? Do you know? And I don't like lying, so I would literally just look at them with this kind of, obviously you can't see because it's a podcast, but you can imagine the face I'm pulling up being like, no. One of them was Roger Medwell, actually, I'll never forget, and he was like, you would tell me, wouldn't you, Laura? And I was like, Roger, please leave me alone. But luckily we did get shortlisted, and then you submit a final bid, which is an epic document, you can imagine, and then you have to go and present to the judges, and they visit, and I could talk to you about this process for about 3 hours, so I'm now going quite quickly. Yeah. But if there's bits of it that are interesting, we can explore them. But it's a year-long process where basically you build the city up to fever pitch, mm-hmm. is what we did. Mm-hmm. So by the time we'd submitted the bid, the city was buzzing, I'm sure you remember, mm-hmm. and the time at the people at the Belgrade, but the pressure was unbelievable because everybody was so excited. We were trending nationally on Twitter, and everybody, like, I got kind of stopped on the street, people that were saying, oh, do you really think we'll win? So it was really great, and it's where we needed to be, but it was utterly, utterly terrifying. I can't even tell you how stressed I was at that point.
I remember that there being a feeling that, or I was part of that feeling of worrying that Coventry wasn't going to win because we were already doing lots of stuff. And I always felt that the City of Culture liked to make cities. And actually, we were doing this, and maybe that would work against us because we were already a very forward-thinking city that was doing lots of things and we were growing. And I still remember the day when you were on the One Show. I still remember it clearly. Now, I think I must have watched that video 20 times. And I think there's the absolute look of shock on your face when it was announced that we'd won. And I always say that was almost, for someone like me, that is obviously Etch and Pin, that was the start of Etch and Pin for me, because I remember watching the One Show and seeing everybody in the Belgrade, I think it was, waving their flags. And I kind of wasn't part of it. And I was sat there going, why aren't I part of this? And I thought, because I'm not bringing something to the table. And it almost was the start of Etch and Pin of, actually, if I want to be part of those conversations, I need to do something myself. So although I've never kind of really been too hand in hand with City of Culture, I've always been somebody that actually, it was the kickstart for me of, actually, let's celebrate the city. If these people are celebrating the city, and there were so many people there, and some of them I recognised, some that I didn't, and I thought, I need to be part of that. It was the start of kind of what's coming. But just quickly then, tell me how that felt then when you did get the... And the winner is Coventry.
Oh, incredible. Absolutely incredible. The only regret that I have is that we didn't get home very quickly. Yeah, so it snowed and we got stuck on a bus on the motorway somewhere, all on our phones. But it was amazing. And I think that I decided Coventry was winning probably in end of 2016. So I'd done quite a lot of, by that point, workshops, met a lot of people, done a lot of speeches where I'd said yes we'll win, but I think I really started to believe it towards the end of 2016, because I started to see the buy-in from communities and our partners. So by the time we got to the kind of end of 2017, there was no way they were giving it to anybody else. It wasn't really an option. They didn't know that.
And I'm sure there was someone in every organisation who thought the same thing.
Exactly. And actually, one of the cities was slightly late onto the stage of the one show. And I was with Emma Harabin, who was my co-presenter with the judging panel, and she turned to me and she went, "They're being secretly briefed of Lost." And I remember saying, "Emma, no, not now." I was like, "Don't do this to me now." But yeah, they were just late. Yes. But you look into every look, every kind of little whisper that you can catch around. And I saw it a couple of weeks ago with Bradford, who obviously I'm thrilled that they're now the City of Culture and excited for them to go on their journey. But I could see all the cities there kind of analysing every move that Phil Redmond made and Nadine Dorries is trying to work out. Do they know? Yeah.
So, and I'm not sure this could be a question that you could spend an hour, 2 hour, 3 hours answering, but why do you think Coventry won at that point?
So I think that we told a really authentic, the city told a really authentic story, and the judges understood the impact that Coventry could make as UK City of Culture. So I think part of it was around the youth and diversity of the city. So Coventry as a place absolutely epitomises Britain, I think, and actually the world, I would say. So there is somebody from everywhere in Coventry, kind of 120 languages spoken in schools. So I think that was a big part of it. Geographically, so it had gone to Derry, Londonderry and Hull, neither of which are particularly easy to travel to. Coventry, 40 million people within 2 hours travel. Pre-COVID, we had really big ambitions for visitors because it's so easy, an hour from London. And I actually think that when the judges came to the city, and we had this big lunch at Fargo Village, which was very different to how the other cities did. And we sat the judges next to people from the community rather than people from business or the kind of council who were also there. It felt like we wanted it, genuinely really felt like we wanted it. And they trusted that we could deliver on what we were promising, which is the other big thing, I think, because we went into the room with the judges in Hull with Martin Reid, the chief exec of the council, Justine, who was managing our community engagement programme and then went on to direct Coventry Moves a few years later, which I love. Louis Lewinson, who was back then a 21-year-old choreographer with a fantastic story to tell. Emma Harabin, who'd been delivering our programme up until then and obviously has links born and bred in Coventry, school in Coventry. And then obviously our chair, David Burbage. We presented these kind of six people that were in and of the city. Mm-hmm. And we had kind of the 360,000 people right behind us who wanted to win. So I think all of that combined is really why we won.
So I'm sure then things literally changed overnight. So the city's announced it was City of Culture. What were the first weeks after that? What do they look like?
So the next day, the Minister for Culture and the Chair of the Judging Panel came. We did not know that until the day before. So, and I'll never forget, I rang Mark Worth from Highly Sprung. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Mark, any chance of getting Urban Astronaut to Fargo?" Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, when? I was like, 3 hours. And that's another reason, like, Coventry is so good at those. So, I can do it. Yeah, no worries, Laura. I'll be there. And there's some minutes in the bidding process as well where I sent an email to everybody that I knew in Coventry for the picture that you may have seen. Mm-hmm. That's me in Moore Memorial Park with like a camel and children and the way. And it was amazing. But I think that's what happened first. And then we had to go quiet for a while. And that was really hard. Yeah. It was really hard because we'd, as I said, we'd worked the city up to a fever pitch and everybody was so excited and we won. And everyone immediately, rightly so, goes, "Well, let's go." Yeah. And you're there going, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. We need a chief exec. We need to create a director. We need to recruit a team." So we were quite public in saying, "Right, bear with us. It's going to take us 6 to 8 months to recruit." And it ended up taking us a little bit longer than that because it was kind of a big team that we had to recruit. But we kept going. So we did more events at Godiva Festival. We continued with our build-up programme. And then we just spent quite a lot of time kind of recruiting. So Shanina Martin came in quite quickly. We had our job descriptions ready to go. So even before we'd won, we had those two big post kind of job advertisements ready. So that was the main thing we had to do. We had to get them on board as quickly as we could. And we had a really good plan B as well, to be honest. If we hadn't won, we were absolutely going to be the city that goes, "It's fine. No hard feelings. Yeah. Coventry's been set back before, and good Lord, we're the city that keeps going." Yeah. So we all had all of that to do as well. But recruiting, continuing to deliver some programme, going straight into communities and start having consultations. So we did a kind of 3-month public meeting tour, if you like. So Emma and I toured around so many different areas in Coventry and just had conversations like we're having now, mm-hmm. of going, okay, we've won now. Mm-hmm. What does your city of culture look like? So a lot of those conversations.
Mm-hmm. And for you personally, how was that then? So something that you obviously worked on for so long that obviously we had the result that we wanted, but then it's that case of kind of letting go. And it was always something I struggled on at the NHS, is the kind of letting go of getting somebody else to start doing the work kind of with you. How was that for you?
To be honest, I actually really enjoyed it. I didn't struggle with it at all because I'd always said if we win, that kind of chief exec role was not something that I could deliver. Mm-hmm. By that point, I was kind of late 20s and I'd managed to, I mean, this imposter syndrome was insane going through the bidding process. And there was no way I had the skills or experience to deliver a multi-million pound citywide arts festival. So it never felt like it was outsiders coming in. It felt like outsiders that I was there with open arms saying, I need you, come and help us. The city needs these kind of amazing people to come in and help. So I think it was different because you do lose a little bit of the family that we had, I think, is the only bit. Because there was eight of us by the time we won and we were in one room on Far Gosford Street basically all the time. The kind of work-life balance out the window. We lived there, we ate there, we hung out there.
You were always there when I passed all the time. We'd always wave through the window.
We were always there. And if I wasn't there, I was only in the arts organisations in the city. That was the bit that was quite different because you can't have a close relationship with 100 plus people. You just can't. So you have to, people are delivering things in City of Culture that I don't necessarily know everything about because I'm only one person. But it's amazing. I think we've built an incredible team. But there wasn't a point really where I found it difficult to let that go. It was more excitement that these people were going to come in and, mm-hmm. and actually make it happen. You know,
no, that takes more self awareness than what I've got. I always just see stuff like that as like a threat. But no, it's good to hear that you saw it as kind of extra pair of hands and to have the kind of self awareness that at that stage in your career that actually that probably wasn't something you were able to deliver. And seeing people as kind of people support you with that rather than a threat.
I could learn from, absolutely. I said to our chair, I said I don't want to be the chief executive. Not don't want to. I physically can't be. But I will live in their pockets for the next 4 years. Yeah. And I was involved in the recruitment process because it was important to me that's somebody that I got on with because of it was, although I did have that self-awareness, it was really important to me. Mm-hmm. And I wanted personally to know it was in safe hands.
So as the team expands, I think something that the city was nervous about early doors was everything was going to be outsourced outside of Coventry and Coventry wouldn't have their fingerprints all over it. How did you make sure that that wasn't the case?
I think it came from the bidding process. So we this commitment to co-creation, although Shanine's made it happen, was in the bidding process. Mm-hmm. So as part of recruiting the team, so Shanine, Martin, all the producers, I think we recruited 15 originally, some of whom were from the city, some of whom weren't, they had to buy into this idea of co-creation. They had to buy into working with local artists. Mm-hmm. And co-creation isn't about us telling people what you want them to do, which is really difficult. And it's so hard to market. When you get to marketing communications, it's so hard because you're not then buying in a product off the shelf. We did a bit of that, but hardly any of it really. If you look at the festivals that we did, like Generate Festival, Party on the Green, even the Summer of Surprises work that we did in Faith, even some of the big ones, Little Amal was all co-created, but it's not obvious. So I think some of the people that have felt necessarily that we haven't been delivering with the city, it's because we haven't necessarily always been delivering with the people that they know mm-hmm. or recognise, because that's what's been so important. It's actually, we've found other companies, other cultural communities, other artists that actually you weren't necessarily in the cultural sphere when we were bidding and aren't necessarily people that you would know, because we've been finding new voices who've maybe always been there, but they've just not necessarily had the platform to be able to deliver. So I think that's been really important as well. So I'm talking about people kind of like Laura Nyahuya and Maokwo, who Laura's been an artist for years and has been delivering, but not necessarily to the kind of spotlight that Coventry City of Culture has been able to offer. That, and that's one example. There's hundreds of examples of people that have been able to kind of the Choir with No Name and all the work we did around homelessness is, I mean, Shanine's been on the podcast previously talking about all of this, I'm sure, but just because it's not the people that you know doesn't necessarily mean that Coventrians haven't been involved every single step of the way.
And I think that was something that maybe was early doors. I think some of that kind of perception of what it was going to be rather than what it was. But I think it's a really valid point. I think that we need to make sure that everyone has access to the spotlight at some point. It can't just be the same people all along. And I'm sure that would be frustrating. I think if I had have started Etch and Pin 2 or 3 years before, I think I could have felt some of that frustration of actually there's other people in the city that are doing stuff and I'm doing that there. So I do kind of get some of those frustrations. Have you got any advice for people now City of Culture has ended, some of those people that may feel that they didn't get the year in the spotlight, how they can continue to grow and continue to kind of get some of that spotlight?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if I've learned anything working in Coventry, it's the Coventry art sector is so collaborative. Like, it's super collaborative. People are really brilliant and working together. So I think if there's still people out there that think, oh, there was my pet project just wasn't realised in City of Culture for whatever reason, my advice to them would be to reach out to the council as well, because obviously they've got some fantastic people that work there and they can support, but also reach out via the kind of networks on social media. So obviously you've got to watch out posting what your project is, but I would definitely say I've got this idea, is anybody out there, can somebody introduce me to somebody? So places like Fargo Village, who've got Fab Lab and the kind of Common Ground with the kind of screen printing, we've got
RTB.
Yeah, exactly. There's tons of places of people that are doing kind of some really interesting work. Shopfront Theatre's doors are always open. If I know anything, Julie and Chris are always there, kind of ready and willing to chat to people and to help. We've got two universities as well who have kicking out students who've got ideas. So I think it's just about being open to having some conversations and being able to flex your ideas and not relying on somebody else to do it for you. Is the big one, because they're not. No one's going to come to you and say, here's £1,000, what would you like to do? You're going to have to put out some feelers and have to apply for some funding is the other thing.
But there was lots of that at the beginning, wasn't there? I think there was lots of meet the funders. There was lots of kind of workshops for people to learn how to do that. Like the way that you and I had talked about when we first finished university and not knowing how to fill out an application form. I think there was lots of opportunities early doors around fundraising and about applying for funding.
Yeah, God, you know, that was a huge strand of work that I'd almost forgotten about, meet the funder work. We've been running a kind of sector support kind of programme the entire time we've been City of Culture. So during lockdown, we also worked with our loyalty partner TRG to run some workshops around audiences and how you develop audiences. You're right, we did the Meet the Funder. We've run producing workshops, co-creation workshops, just did a big conference. And the vast majority, if not everything, has been free. Mm-hmm. So part of City of Culture is about upskilling the city to be ready to continue. So the arts organisations that I'm sure Shaneen talked about that we've been working with are kind of delivery organisations like Coventry Refugee and Migrant Centre, Positive Youth Foundation. So they've been our kind of community partners with some of our Caring City team. That's all about people being able to understand that you can use the arts to tackle some of the world's most difficult and challenging problems rather than just kind of using other ways. So that's all legacy. Mm-hmm. That's then organisations that are now using arts and culture in a way that they necessarily weren't doing before. Mm-hmm.
So when I spoke to Shaneen, we talked about COVID. I don't want us to, I think everyone's bored of talking about COVID, but obviously it was a big impact. So let's set a minute from now for you to kind of talk about how COVID affected the city from now, and then we can move on to some of the more positive stuff.
Yeah, it was awful. It was awful. It completely skewed our plans. So obviously the big one is that we moved the year. And the thing that I will hold on to is we had 9 properly costed and about 15 different proposals for what we could do, which moved from we'll do it a year later, we'll just do it regardless, we won't do it at all. And not a single partner, and we must have spoken to, I'd say, into 20, 30 people about all these different kind of proposals that we had. Not one single person said cancel. Mm-hmm. And that was massive, because it would have been so easy to say it's too hard. Because at that point, and it's so easy to forget that the human condition is very much we compartmentalise. I've compartmentalised. You barely remember that beginning bit where we had no idea. Even the people in May that were saying it should have been like this all along, I was there going, yeah, I know. I was like, can you imagine this? That's what we wanted to do. But we couldn't. You couldn't draw a crowd. So our opening event, I actively didn't do my job. So my job switched completely to be trying to encourage an audience to stay away, which is, I mean, one day I'll write a blog about that, because it was crazy. But also audience sentiment. People were scared. They didn't want to come out and mix. And we were running a massive cultural festival. But our partners, the council, the police were incredible. The audiences were amazing. They still came out. And we never became I was about to touch wood, but no, we never became a super spreader event, which was my biggest fear. Mm-hmm. My biggest fear was that we would keep on going and something would happen that would mean that we would be one of the festivals like down south where they were. Yeah. And we didn't. We kept people really safe and we delivered an extraordinary, I hope, for people that are listening, I hope, extraordinary year of culture, regardless of COVID.
Okay, 6 seconds done. So let's talk about something.
90, didn't I?
No, I think we'll let you go on that one. So something that I think has been one of the biggest positives that came out of Coventry's year of City of Culture was City Hosts. Yeah. I think they made a huge presence in the city. I know they had their celebration event last week at the Cathedral. Tell me the importance of the City Hosts and what they brought to the project.
Oh, the City Hosts are our moving blue army. They're fantastic. So we've got 1,515 of them fully trained, and I had the privilege of being invited to speak at their celebration event a couple of weeks ago. And they are absolutely the heart of City of Culture. So they are the most passionate people I've ever met in my life about Coventry. And I've learned so much working with our City Hosts. And you can't move for them now in the city. You see them everywhere. And they will tell you where the toilets are. They'll tell you what's on. They'll tell you where to go and get like the best food if you could just get around this corner. But really, they are absolutely a legacy. And they're born out of the ENV ambassadors. So David Bowie and the kind of work he did in the Olympics back in 2012 then formed into City Hosts and then will now go into the Commonwealth Games. And that's real legacy. But they're incredible. I mean, we've had two engagements from our City Hosts. So two that met as City Hosts, and then another engagement on the Alfie and Rosie on the evening of the celebration. So they've found friendship, they've found love, and they've found a real commitment to the city, which a lot of them had anyway. But I hope that I'll be seeing them in Cov for a long time since. But yeah, they're fantastic people. And I personally am incredibly grateful for every single hour of service that they've given to City of Culture. They've come out in every single weather. Coventry Glides, oh my gosh, Aaron, it was so cold. And I remember just looking at them being like, come on, can I get you a coffee? Can I give you a hug? It was just, yeah, they're an amazing group of people.
So you touch upon legacy. So what does the City of Culture transform into now? What does that look like going forward?
So it's really exciting that Coventry City of Culture Trust as an organisation will exist for another 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be shifting to a kind of green futures focus. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be doing some commissioning and working with our partners and keeping those ideas of co-creation and being absolutely Coventryan to our heart, but looking at it through a kind of climate focus, which again, Coventry's had a history where we had the Green Party was born in the city, all the driverless cars, kind of battery factory, everything puts us absolutely into the right place to be leading the way in terms of the kind of our green future. We also hopefully have opened up the first UK's permanent immersive digital art gallery, The Real Store. So
my store sold there.
Yeah, exactly. www.therealstore.co.uk Bookerly for best prices. That's my job. You wouldn't be surprised. But actually, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. So there's one in Paris, there's one in Tokyo, and there's one in Cov. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a fantastic company for us to be in. And also that leaves a real physical, tangible legacy of City of Culture. There is a new visitor attraction that's going to exist permanently with internationally significant artists, and it's really fun, and Cov folk are loving it, and that makes me so happy, because you never know in Cov, you never know, are people going to love it, are they going to be like, what on earth is this like weird digital thing, but they're loving it, particularly young kids. So if you've got young kids, it's one for you. And Assembly Festival Garden. Mm-hmm. So that continues until the beginning of September. Mm-hmm. So kind of Olivier Award nominated shows, as you do in Central Cov. Mm-hmm. So it's really exciting that there will be a legacy. And that's not even taking into account the relationships that we've made with the council, with the police, with our communities, with our host organisations that I talked about earlier, and our beloved City Hosts.
So I touched upon it at the beginning around your MBE. So alongside Martin and Shanine, recognised as part of the Queen's Honours. So tell me how that came to be. Tell me how you found out. I think I know myself, but you tell the audience how kind of that came to be.
Yeah. Oh, it was crazy. It's never something I expected in a million years. Honestly, and that's not me trying to be kind of fake humble or anything. I had no idea. And I just got a letter, to be honest. As simple as that. I got a letter. I was singing Super Freak at the top of my voice in my kitchen on a Saturday morning. And it was dated on my birthday, actually, which is really like a nice kind of not nice touch from them. Yeah. They don't know.
Especially let's make a birthday.
Yeah, exactly. It was a nice coincidence. But yeah, it's extraordinary. And I accept it, but on behalf of just the incredible team. So these things aren't done by individuals. And it is really lovely to be recognised, and I really appreciate it. But it's also that kind of ooh moment of, it's also on behalf of hundreds of people that have, it's not been a job. I haven't had a job for 7 years. I've had a way of life for 7 years.
It's like the end of Mean Girls when, doesn't she have like a tiara and she cuts it all up and she throws it to everyone in the audience. Oh, you need to find a way for you to split your MBE between all the different people in the city. So then how about your role then? So I know that you've had, your role will be changing or what you will be doing. Give me an idea of kind of what your next couple of years is looking like.
Yep. So I'm still here holding on by my fingertips. Can't get rid of me that easy. So as of July, I am going part-time with the Trust. So we're going to have a new Director of Marketing, Communications and Ticketing coming in, who I'm really excited about. Can't tell who it is quite yet, but they're fantastic and they are proper cov and it's going to be brilliant. So really excited about that. And so I've got a nice long handover period with them. And then I am going to be going freelance from the beginning of October is my current plan. Although if I've learned anything in this job, it's plan for nothing because you never know what's going to happen. But I would love to be able to share some of the things that I have learned and we have learned with other places, maybe go abroad for a little while. I'd love to do some things in maybe Europe or in America. But who knows? Who really knows? Because I like, we bought our first house here kind of 9-10 years ago now. Coventry is absolutely my home. Mm-hmm. So it certainly isn't, I'm downing tools and running off. I'm still here and I'll always be on the end of a phone to anybody that lives and works in Coventry or that's been part of our journey that wants to just chat things through. Because that's where I've learned the most, those phone calls to people or those Twitter direct messages of going, oh, I've got this idea, what do you think? So yeah, hopefully a little bit of that as well.
Yeah. Thank you for your time. Congratulations on your MBE. I know how hard you've worked, particularly being here from the beginning or almost the beginning of Coventry becoming City of Culture. I look forward to see what you do next. And again, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. Great to speak to you.